listening to the Wait, What If podcast.
That was a story that was also true. There was a lot truer than the truth that I put down.
I saw what would look like these little dudes from like Monsters, Inc. movie, and they were kind of like knocking on my brain, opening it up a little bit, like peeking in, knocking on my brain, peeking in, knocking on my brain, peeking in.
As always, your host, Kevin Sullivan.
Ladies and gentlemen.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he's.
And with that, Secret Agent John Taylor
Thank
is in
you,
the
Kevin.
Studio. Do you like that? And then of course I have Savannah's now. Ready? So you're like, yours is back in time. Yeah.
All right.
I know you're like a futurist, but it's still a time travel song. So okay. I figured I'd do that. You know what? It was about 10 years ago, maybe longer, 15 years ago. I was living in Boston. And I always, even as a kid, I loved Huey Lewis. And I loved him. I mean, I had like all his, I celebrated his entire catalog.
What was your favorite song, out of curiosity?
You have to bring that up. Now that I haven't listened to him in a while,
I would mine.
Say I used to like that one that when I have to sing it because I don't know the name of it. Whole Lot of Lovin'.
Okay.
Do you like that one?
I was hoping it would be mine, but no.
What's yours?
Mine was I Am Happy to Be Stuck.
That's
you.
A good one. That's yeah. a good one.
It was a great video on the island.
Was it?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't remember that one. Anyway, so I decided that, remember how everyone, like Neil Diamond had a huge comeback in like the, maybe the late 90s, early 2000s? Well, I decided I was going to do that for Huey Lewis. And
oh, yeah. Bring him back.
Mm-hmm. I thought I alone could do this, and it didn't work. Not at all. So Huey is a fan, so I apologize to you, Huey. I did try my best. I'll give you a call later. So tonight...
He's not a fan anymore.
Say again?
He's not a fan anymore.
Yeah. Don't listen to her, Huey. Tonight we are going to. So, to be honest with you, I was like trying to come up with some topics, and I always want them to be, I guess, tangible to what you guys are each professionals. And so, yours is like science and future and medicine and nootropics, and you're just basically a druggy science futurist. And then with yours, I always try to add like. Because, you know, with the Wait, What If, we try to stay in the weird area of conversation, not the mainstream ideas on things.
You have succeeded.
Yep. Thank you. Is that a compliment or do you just insult me?
I don't know. I think that was a jab.
Okay. It was. Anyways, so with yours, I decided that let's talk about the future of crime.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then also to get me into it, the metaphysical side of crime, which would be... psychics and what do they work and knowing your background and committing murder, studying murders, you, I don't know if you've ever encountered anything like that or if you've ever done anything. So those are the topics tonight. Let me get out my papers and see where we begin. So now that I have notes, this is how I'm going to do the show. What is going on, JT?
not a lot, actually.
What's new?
I can't handle the structure.
I know. It's horrible. I can't do a structure. You're right. So, no, but you're just getting over some neck. And you know what? Your neck is now the third week, maybe the fourth week of your neck being a topic of conversation for this podcast.
Interesting.
Because there was that one that you were supposed to come to and you had just thrown it out and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to come that time. And I don't remember what that topic was supposed to be a few weeks ago.
It was predictions for 2017.
Oh, yeah. It was a prediction show.
And you did it after the first, so I was kind of going to make it interesting. You could predict things that already happened.
You were going to predict what happened on,
yeah.
The world won't end on January 1st. Right. I can guarantee that. What were your predictions? Do you remember them offhand?
No.
Okay.
Oh, the only prediction I remember, and you were saying that you had something along the same lines, was mm-hmm. about the concept that phone apps are going to go away.
Did I say that?
Well, I said it, and you said you had something similar.
Oh.
And so my feeling is that phone apps are kind of like the anti-internet. Mm-hmm. Like the internet is, you go to one place for everything. It's convenient. And phone apps are unbelievably inconvenient that you got to have 10,000 of them.
And they take up room on your phone.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea. Yeah. So I feel like at some point they've got to go away. I just don't feel like there's anything good there. But
yeah, like the Uber app, because I never really use it, but occasionally I will use it. And I have to download it. I don't want to have an app on my phone that I only use every once in a while.
Right,
so I
get you.
I have to download it and then delete it from my phone every time I want
it. And then you got to remember your account when you put it back on.
Yeah.
First world problems. First world. When people complain about stuff and I'm like, I have a magic, I mean, literally to anyone else in the entire world, I have a magic silver box in my kitchen that fresh cold water comes out of, mm-hmm. ice cubes come out of, and it makes meat last for weeks and weeks. For me, about 2 weeks after the expiration date. It's wonderful. First world problems. I mean, that's probably the most eye-opening meme, but not to digress. So that was one you think. So what do you think it's just going to, you think there's, I don't know.
How that's going to happen?
Come out? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not a technologist enough. That's my gut is that I just don't feel like it makes much sense.
Cause all it is a dedicated web page to your whatever your thing is. Right.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. So it's like a dedicated button that takes you, but then it's proprietary, meaning it also has an application, meaning like for Uber, it's dedicated, it's online, but I'm sure there's some offline capabilities or whatever. So I don't think you could get rid of them.
Oh, I think you can. I think you're absolutely, I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but I mean, I've been realizing that I'll just look at my phone and I'll be like, there's nothing there. I don't know why I'm looking at you right now. I've been finding myself do that.
Just staring at your phone?
Yeah. I'm like, there's really no app that I need to see.
Wow.
So I really think that's going to happen. Like, yeah. I think you're right that I don't really need half the apps here. If there was a way to kind of, yeah, do away with the apps, maybe go to one central. And I think people have tried that. I know this has been a topic of discussion on some of the tech podcasts I listen to where they're like, we need to really get rid of this whole app thing.
So I never really considered it, but now I'm thinking about it.
Another idea I have is like a localized internet. Like somehow you get off the internet. Like if you're wanting to look at restaurants in Raleigh, mm-hmm. rather than having to rely on the algorithms within Google to be able to know that you're looking for restaurants in Raleigh, that there should be like little internets for locations that geographic specific. So, I mean, if you're looking for a carpet company, clean company in Raleigh, you don't need to see the whole internet. You only need to see businesses that are in the Raleigh area.
Isn't that why they have location services?
Well, I mean, there are certain things built into it, but mm-hmm. it's not foolproof. I mean, if you go and try to find that stuff, you're still going to hit all kinds of things that are in other places. So it would just, I mean, I obviously have no idea how you would do it, but it would basically be like an off-ramp from the internet that would be more localized. So it'd be like a lower version of the internet. So every area would have that somehow. Mm. Like you tag websites or something. I don't know.
I'm finding it difficult to understand how that's different from what I already have. Like whenever I go to a location, I can always say, coffee shops near me.
Maybe that you mean like using like the maps function?
Well, I just Google it. Yeah. And I guess it'll pop up with a list of selections. I mean, Google does it.
Maybe that does fix the problem. I don't know.
Is that what you're
I'd have to
what?
Test it.
What do you do with your phone if you don't do that? That's all I do with my phone.
I play Words with Friends.
I used to play that, but
I don't have any of those.
I get really bored with games very quickly. That's why I don't have a gaming system. You know, like Xbox or Playbox or X Station. I don't do any of those things that the kids do. The Wii Wii, I don't. Silly. How's Twisted Podcast going? That's another thing.
Good.
I wrote down here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm doing two episodes a month, which is one of those things I don't really want to commit to more than that, as you're learning that doing it the more regular, I mean, it's a lot of work to do
it
the
is.
Entire process, and that people, once you set an expectation, people get used to it. So you mm-hmm. have to maintain it, and trying to line up guests and have, you know, fresh content every time. So, I mean, it's good, but I feel like two times a month, if it's only me, is probably going to be the max.
That is really... It's really the as a sole person show. That's all I would recommend.
How is it doing? Is it getting a lot of downloads? I love your podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, twistedpodcast.com. Not to toot mm-hmm. my own horn there, but yeah, it is. I mean, I think true crime is pretty hot now, and that's just a coincidence. I would be doing true crime whether it was popular or not. But there are a lot of true crime podcasts out there. But I just feel like I'm somewhat unique in that. I'm kind of giving like a fresh analysis, and then I'm trying to bring in a lot of people who are either experts in the true crime genre or authors to talk about specific cases or things within within the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. And so just, I don't know, trying to keep that fresh, I think really helps.
I was thinking I had an idea for a podcast, a true crime one, right? Mm-hmm. But I actually commit the crimes, and each week I give a little recap about, you know, who I've been stalking, and see if people, you know, maybe the guests, not the guests, the listeners can figure, is it me? No, not a good idea.
I think some people have done stuff like that on Facebook where they talk about what they've done, not an actual podcast. Hmm.
There was a movie out, for life, I can't remember it. Jake Gyllenhaal. He was like a news reporter. Tabloid guy or something.
Zodiac.
Night Stalker.
No. Good movie.
It was Night Stalker.
Night Stalker, yeah. So he was basically like a
Silk Stockings?
No,
Night Stalker.
Red Shoe Diary? No. yeah. So, anyways, he was a criminal, just, you know, stealing stuff and doing,
he was a reporter though, right? No, he was a videographer.
Yeah. So movie. Then, he met someone that was videotaping like a scene of an accident, and he's like, hey, you know, I can do that. So he goes and gets a video camera, and he finds out that if he goes to a crime scene that's bloody, you know, the bloodier it gets, the more people want it. So he starts manipulating the crime scenes, setting up the crimes and filming them as they're occurring. And it was pretty good. I liked it.
It was good. He was so creepy in that.
He's a great actor. I got to hand it to him.
Have you heard of The Case File? That's a true crime one. Case File?
No, I haven't.
It's some Australian guy. And what I love about this one is that, well, I mean, he talked about a story that happened, I think, I want to say sometime in the 90s. A couple of stories, and one of them, I just downloaded it like over the Christmas holiday, and I was listening to the original one. It was some awful thing that happened in the 90s. Some serial killer was like killing these young ladies, and then I downloaded one that had just been released the day before. I mean, this is totally coincidental. Just been released the day before, and it was a follow-up, and apparently the guy had just been... had just been apprehended, the suspect.
Oh, wow. So you picked a random one, and then the sequel to that one.
Yes, had just been released the day before. I got so lucky on that.
That is an amazing story.
That's cool.
Riveting. It's just like when you pick a random show. I'm teasing. Wow. When you pick a random show on like, or I don't know, you catch it on TV back when it wasn't all on demand, and every time, you would never watch the show, but every time it would be on, it would always be the same episode.
Yeah.
Coincidences. Did you hear our coincidence show? The coincidence show last week?
No, just talking about like unusual coincidences. Or
no, I had put an axe in my truck, and then like 2 or 3 weeks later, I came upon a man stuck in his car that was burning, and I had to use my axe to get him out.
And that's your coincidence?
That was a coincidence, yeah. Because who has an axe in your truck? I never had an axe in my truck, and then I put one in my truck, and sure enough, I had to smash through a car. It was pretty
cool.
Do
you think it was an actual coincidence, or you think there was some kind of like outside intervention there?
Well, I was gonna touch on that today, because every time, so obviously, what I like to do besides go on rants of completely unrelated topics is explore the metaphysical world and try to answer is what we see in front of us is the concrete world. Is there more to it than that? And over the 2 years I've done this show, I've had a lot of convincing people on that have made me think one way. And then the more I research it and I start reading about stuff, it's like I just fall right back into the skeptic role. Mm-hmm. For example, I read a study today on coincidences, and actually I even took notes on it. I did take notes and then I didn't finish. But what they call coincidences are a surprising occurrence of events perceived as meaningfully related with no apparent causal connection. So the article actually talked about a girl who found money when she was a child waiting in line at Darien Lake, which is some amusement park. And like 5 years later, she overheard someone having a conversation and that person lost the money at Darien Lake and it was the exact same amount of money. And she's like, oh my gosh, that's me. And so what this person was talking about coincidences and thinking, are they supernatural? Or is it just the fact that you're made aware of a coincidence that it becomes a coincidence? And really these things happen all the time. You just don't know it. Like you don't go up to a stranger and be like, all right, let's go over where we were the last 2 weeks and see if we, you know, cross paths or right. anything like that. Or again, with numbers, you put like, I think it's all you need is 23 people in a room and
two of them have like the same birthday.
Well, then it, you have at least a 50-50 shot of having the same birthday mm-hmm. with at least one person in the room. So it kind of pulls you away from the metaphysical weird woo woo thing. And it's just like, it's just numbers, just chaos theory.
Maybe. I mean, yes.
So yeah, most likely what you said last week was, I had a hammer, so I was looking for nails. You know what I mean? Right. So I had the axe, but I...
So the question I have is, do you think that if you were driving along, because the hammer looking for the nail was you stopping because you saw that, I think there was a woman on the side of the road or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think that there would have been a circumstance in which you would have seen her, or, okay, one, seen her and not stopped, mm-hmm. or just not even noticed? Like, do you think it was pretty obvious?
No, I'm always aware when stuff like that's happening because of my medical training. And mm-hmm. I figured, you know, at some point someone's going to be choking on something or someone's going to, and I have a EMS kit in my car with airways and stuff, just in case either I'm in an accident or I see an accident and I have the stuff there. So I look for, well, I don't look for it, but if I see someone on the side of the road, I always give them an extra glance, see if they're like waving their arms or something like that.
Okay. So that was going to happen no matter what. Like that, the axe, your reticular activating system, the part of your brain that's searching for whatever, the coincidence, mm-hmm. that didn't really come into play then, because you would have stopped. You would have seen her anyway.
Yeah, I would have stopped anyway.
You would have seen her, you would have stopped anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, still completely coincidence. I think the universe was
working in my favor.
Supernaturally.
Working in that woman's favor, I guess, right?
It was a man, yeah.
Yeah.
Very.
Well, so what was the relationship between the woman and the man?
I don't know.
Did she see him or?
I don't know. It's weird when you're in stressful situations. A lot of times when I was in the military, and then this one is just, honestly, since the military, my stress level has dropped to like zero because I just don't do anything stressful anymore. Even when I was fighting, it was fun. So I never was really stressed out. But this was the first time I was at that adrenaline, life on the line level. And gosh, 2006 was the last time I deployed. So 11 years almost. So I forgot. I just totally lost my train of thought. Oh, when I got there, like I didn't think, you know, there was no thinking really going on.
Yeah.
It was more just reactionary. Like I saw the fire and then I'm like, oh, I have an axe. One cut the axe, but I don't remember the people around me. I was kind of tunneled in to getting him out. And then, yeah, that's all.
So we don't know how, cause it didn't make sense to me why she would have been there. Like,
I think maybe she saw him drive off the road or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like, I mean, a lot of coincidence is just that you either when it happens, you acknowledge that extreme scenario. But like one of the things that I've always thought about is you have that friend that every time you go out to eat, they complain about the food that's cooked at the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
That's you.
Is it really? Is that you? Oh,
and And so
sometimes
at first you think, well, they're just picky, that's why. But then after a while you start to realize that there really are bad things happen to that person at a restaurant every time. It's always that person. And the example I have, I was played golf in college, and one of the guys on the team, so we went to dinner like every night together when we traveled. So I was with him all the time. There's six of us. Mm-hmm. And every time he was the only one that had the steak undercooked or, you know, didn't get the mashed potatoes or whatever. And so I always wondered how much of it is because he's picky and how much of it is just because, like, some kind of coincidence, like that. Why is it happening to him? Is there something he's doing that's caught that negative energy, mm-hmm, that's causing him to basically not get what he wants? And it was too much to be just random. It was always him, you know, 99% of the time, right, there was a problem.
So what did you think it was?
I think it's just one of those things you can't explain. But I think I do believe that his negative energy is a factor. I feel that
that sounds rather supernatural. Like, I'm surprised.
Well, I don't think it's supernatural.
I don't think so. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Energy brings to you negative things.
Absolutely.
How does that happen?
Yeah.
In a rational world.
An example that I would give would be, say, playing a sport. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're playing golf and you're saying, don't hit the ball in the water, don't hit the ball in the water.
Yeah.
Your chances of hitting the ball in the water are significantly higher.
Yes. Right? That's because your subconscious will kick in.
There's right.
Like,
and so you're affecting your own physical, but I believe that that negative can affect other people as well as being positive and the same. And I don't know exactly how that works, but there's certainly, you walk into a room, you can feel positive energy, you can feel negative energy. And I think that people exude that. And so I think that certainly has an impact. And I think that that person is just exuding negative energy somehow, and that's affecting those around him. But I couldn't explain exactly how that happens.
Or it's just in the definition of things. It's is that on me?
It is.
It's in the definition of things. Like, if everything goes wrong for you, then you're going to see everything going wrong for you. You know, like, I can go to work and maybe spill a little bit of coffee on me, but I don't even think about it. It's an afterthought. Mm-hmm. Whereas the person who's always negative is always going to be like, oh, God damn, I was on my way to work and I spilled my coffee and then I almost hit a squirrel. Whereas other people just don't focus on
right.
that. Yeah. So, I mean, but also there's that whole idea that you put out positive vibrations, negative vibrations, and wavelengths and like things attract each other. And that's, I don't know. That's what people talk about.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems strange. The only thing that seems like, I can understand the sort of the rational side of things. Like, if you're a very positive person and you're going to observe things a lot more positively, and probably people are going to treat you a little bit better. They're going to be a little bit more, I don't know, maybe the waitress noticed this person's kind of annoying, mm-hmm, and I don't know, somehow when she's repeating the order to the cook kind of felt like, that's annoying. I'm going to give him a undercooked steak. I don't know. Maybe that's it. But I feel like there could be other things.
I agree. Yeah.
I'm sure there's papers written about it. We can find out. Next question I had for that I wanted to talk to before we even get to any of our, topics that we had pre-planned here. What the hell is going on? And I want to ask you specifically because of your background, what is going on with all this stuff we're hearing about Trump? And did you know there was two things? There was 12,000 death threats, assassination threats just on Twitter. And I would have to think that the number was a little higher than that. I don't know. And do all 12,000 of those have to get investigated? I mean, I guess I'm not that old. You know, it's not until you're in your 60s that you have a bunch of presidents that you can look back on and reflect upon. I mean, in my adult life, I think the first president or election that I could vote in was Clinton and Dole. Did they run together? And then
they ran against each other.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean? Against each other. So, I mean, I guess I just don't have. And then when you're that age, and even in your 20s, you could really care less who the president is. So I just didn't pay a lot of attention to and I guess it wasn't out there either to the social conversation around the president. And then this one's elected and it's like every day, it's just like Armageddon and it's, you know, partially to blame from the press, but it's almost like, someone had said a dog whistle for assassination, as if like they're like hoping for it or calling for it or something like that. I don't know. What are your takes on it?
Well, I would say I remember when Obama was initially elected, there were things going around in the media saying that there was something like 50% increase in assassination or threats against the president. And they were trying to attribute it to race, that was a thing.
And if I can just, and for the listeners, John used to be a U.S. Secret Service agent, so that's why we're asking this question. But all right, go ahead.
Thank you. But then the Secret Service came out and refuted that and said that wasn't true. There was not like this huge bump in threats. So I don't know whether there's a huge bump in threats now, but now with social media in 2017, it's much easier to make threats. It's
sure.
much easier to not have that sense of responsibility for what you're doing because it's just on a social media site. However, I'd say yes, they probably should investigate every single one of them.
Wow.
And depending on what they said, I mean, I don't know, the specifics of the tweets. I mean, people could be going to prison for that, depending on what they said.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to be taken lightly. I mean, that's a federal, it's a felony.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like,
say it or
yeah.
You should read them. Some of the tweets, it's like, I mean, and I don't like to get into politics on this show just for the fact that it's not what the show's about.
Right.
But no matter who the president is, when you read the stuff, it's really vile. Oh. It's like, you can go on. I mean, just Google. Well, maybe you'll get in trouble if you do that. I don't know. But
dang.
You know what I mean? I don't know if Googling assassination and president is a good thing to do. But just look in the, I mean, it's in the news right now. And you'll see just that one thing was 12,000 tweets about assassinating him. And if you read through them, it's like, I mean, it's some horrible stuff. And I think people, maybe they get brave hiding behind an avatar and just, like not their name.
That's insane. Like even I know that you can go to jail for that or that you can get into trouble for it.
So yeah.
It's like, how can 12,000 people be that careless?
That's yeah. I would imagine that if that is the case, that once they start addressing that will
go away
pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I don't think people are going to be brazenly writing stuff like that once they find out that there could be some serious consequences.
Are you glad you got out before Twitter?
Yeah, I don't think that Twitter was the necessary like pinnacle for why I got out or what I was dreading. But yeah, it seems like a lot of work. But I mean, I guess you can only investigate so many at any given time. But I mean, when I was there, I mean, you would have mentally ill people making threats. You'd have people who were in nursing homes that may or may not have been had their wits about them.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people for a lot of different reasons were doing it. So there were a lot of threats when I was there, which was under Clinton and Bush 43. So, I mean, it's just a different venue, but I would think that social media would encourage more just because people are more willing to say things like that in any vein, right? People are much more confrontational on a social media than they would be in person or over the phone with someone they were talking to.
Yeah. I mean, when Trump got elected, I was thinking, I felt a little bit, I mean, I'm not hugely political. I wasn't really voting for or rooting for him or Hillary, but I feel a little bit more worried about him than I've felt about other presidents in the past.
Like for his health?
Well, for
meaning,
his safety.
Yeah, yeah, that's
it
what I meant.
It seems like it'll be harder to keep him alive.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm afraid
I don't think it'd be an issue at all. I mean,
oh, wow.
Basically,
that's
One, you saw at one point when he was speaking that something occurred and the Secret Service got engaged. And
yeah, some dude ran up on the stage.
Right. I mean, he absolutely did exactly what they wanted him to do. He seems to be very in tune to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And to me, the biggest threat is when you have someone who doesn't take that stuff seriously.
Yeah.
And we have certainly had presidents and people in high power who never took that seriously. And that's much bigger issue because
like Kennedy and the convertible.
Well, I don't think that was his call, but that would be an example.
They're like, sir, would you like a cover on your car? He's like, I need a cover in the car. Like I need a hole in my head.
Right. Where you're
too soon.
That's funny.
Too soon.
Where you're constantly undermining security because you think that there's so much you can't possibly do anything. That kind of person being in the office would be a much bigger security risk than someone who just people don't like.
Hmm. Yeah.
I didn't think about that's weird. I would never have thought about it that way. Huh. I would have thought it would be more based on how many people hate you.
No.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, well, and that's the other thing too. I don't know if a lot of people hate him because the polls just came out today and it was like, I don't know if it was Rasmussen or, it was one of the big ones that was all about his executive orders and people that support him and all that. And it's by what you would see the media telling you or the trends on Twitter or any other sort of Reddit, you would think that it would be like support his decisions 4% or whatever. It was like 58%, you know, 60%. Mm-hmm. Like, so I think the media is also trying to manipulate his.
I can't believe that.
Really? Why can't you believe it? Just kidding. Guy who does not get sarcasm. So I think this.
Oh, I thought you were serious.
No.
Like, why?
Yeah. It's, you know what's crazy about it? And I think we've talked about this before. And actually, I'm going to have a guess. Great. I always forget his last name. I'm sorry, man. I gotta write it down. I think his name is. Well, his name's Gray. I think that's his first name. He's a YouTube video guy, but he had this rant, or he has a show where he, you know, talks about things and explains things. And he was talking about 1984, how it's like, you know, Orwellian censorship of people and how things have turned into that. And you can almost see it. You know what I mean? Like some of this stuff, if you fact check, and I hate, there's buzzwords out nowadays that just drive me nuts. Fake news. Just the term. Every time I see someone say that, I want to just, my head explode because it's just, I'm so sick of hearing about it. And then fact check. Everyone wants to fact check and they fact check with CNN fact checks MSNBC. And I mean, it's like they're all in the same boat. So who's really fact checking who? But when you do your best and try to find the actual story, take for example, hands up, don't shoot, right? If you tell a lie enough, people start to believe it. And or it doesn't become a lie anymore. It becomes just, that's what happened. And again, without trying to get political, but under that situation, the grand jury or the, wasn't there a special investigation from the Justice Department and everyone looked into it and that never happened. That's not how the narrative, or that's not how it happened. It just became a narrative of the people of that movement. And the news went away with it or ran away with it and everything. So it almost becomes, so we're kind of in 1984 right now, the way that, you know, you have these big media conglomerates that have a lot of skin in the game when it comes to politics, that want to manipulate what people or how people act and how people vote and whatever. So they kind of just inject a little bit of half truths and double speak.
See, I would say that this has been going on for decades and you're just now more aware of it.
Okay.
That's possible. And yeah. I'd say like within crime and true crime, it's absolutely there. It's not for political reasons, but almost every major crime is misreported and they have a narrative that they want to convey and that's what they put out there. And I think that's very true with politics and what's going on now is that it's not necessarily what happened. They're not looking for the truth. They've got a story that they want to create. And so they create that story. If the truth comes out later, maybe they issue a correction or they just don't report on it and they just let it go. And but, so, I mean, that's a lot of what I see. I mean, you can argue what the motivations are, but
the fundamental purpose of the First Amendment, at least I feel, is to keep the government at check, right? Or in check. So, you know, if I am allowed free speech and I can write about you, the president, and as long as I'm writing facts, I can, you know, expose whatever horrible things you're doing. And that educates the public and it keeps you in check. Right. So, I mean, it wasn't Watergate. That whole thing was exposed by two,
reporters.
Yeah.
Post.
Yeah. So, Woodward
and Bernstein. Woodward,
yeah. So if that's the point of it, then it's gone. Like then there's no, I mean, maybe a small time blog, but no one trusts small time.
It's been gone for a long time.
Yeah.
I'd say it's better now because now the media doesn't have that stranglehold. You before the internet, I mean, you only had the major media outlets.
Yeah.
I agree with you that it's there, but it's been gone for a long time. It's just that, and if you haven't read Bernard Goldberg's book, Bias, which is about CBS, and I think he wrote it in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it talks all about the media bias that it's been going on for decades.
Okay.
And when he wrote it, it was revolutionary, but it's kind of considered like common sense now.
Yeah.
But he talks about things like during the 1972 election for Nixon, about how he was at this party in Georgetown with all these news people, and everybody was sitting around talking about how they didn't know one person that voted for Nixon. And it turned out, I mean, Nixon won 49 states. And it was just basically this idea of how out of touch the news media is, that they're just completely detached from what's really going on. And that they've got this elitist agenda that they're driving. And so, you know, it just talks about that. And I mean, I don't think that hasn't changed, but it's just different now.
Yeah.
And and so there's just a lot of conflict. And obviously, just on a political side, I mean, this has been one election where every single thing, there are 100 things that Trump did that should have gotten him taken out of contention. That, and I can't explain why they didn't, but they didn't. And yeah. The media just kept trying and trying and trying to get him to out, and it never happened. And he's pretty much fought him the whole way, and he's still fighting him. And that's just irritating them to no end.
Do you think it's the people's disgust with it? Maybe they're just finally saying, all right, enough is enough with all this, you know, manipulation, mass manipulation. We're sick of the establishment. We're sick of the elitists. Let's pick this populist to come in, and whether he's a good candidate or not, which he's arguably not a good candidate, but it didn't matter. It was the big, you know, FU to the rest of the country, to the political elites, to the journalistic elites, to the, you know, whoever else.
Yeah, there's no simple answer for it. I mean, one thing, you were talking about the polls, and I'd say that this election proved the polls are worthless.
That's true. Well,
they were absolutely worthless.
These ones were, yeah. Except LA Times. LA Times seemed to have it. They
really?
They kept calling it pretty much for the entire year. They were the only ones. They were the outliers. So it was like, LA Times.
Right.
But, yeah.
Wasn't there some AI that predicted it?
Really?
Did you guys hear about that? Yeah, mm-mm. There was some sort of artificially intelligent...
Here, pass that over to me so you can get on camera.
Oh.
So you guys can okay. Watch this wonderful discussion on... I don't know. I'll put it up somewhere. So yeah, go ahead. AI predicted the outcome?
Yeah, it did. But I can't remember which system it was. It was a major one, like maybe Watson, or it could have been DeepMind. I don't know. One of the big ones predicted that Trump would win.
Hmm.
Was this like on election night that it predicted that?
Yeah. At 12:01.
Right after
he won. Yeah.
It was crazy.
No, I believe it. I mean, if they're... okay. I'm going to end this, I think, because there's... Thanks for joining us, people. We're going to end it because it's been going a long time on the camera, but I'll put this up later. And if you guys want to listen to this show, go to waitwhatif.com and I'll have it up there. So that's waitwhatif.com. It'll be up like tomorrow, I guess. Thanks, guys. Okay, we are done our live feed, and now we're going to the on-demand.
So how did Trump win?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, he won a lot of Democratic states. I mean, Michigan, Pennsylvania, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. He appealed to a different group. It's hard to explain for me. I mean, I'm kind of baffled by it.
I honestly think it was the underrepresented people throughout the country. I mean, they always say there's a lot of flyover land and
silent majority.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that also, because of the stigma around him, weren't admitting that they were going to vote for him or anything like that. So, you know, because I mean, can you imagine wearing a Make America Great Again hat? I mean, I wouldn't have the balls to wear one at the mall or something like that. I'd be afraid I'd get smashed or something.
Yeah, but it's true. That's crazy.
So,
I think it could have been because a lot of people just really hated her. Like somehow she got in and was the nom.
Oh, she was horrible.
But people really didn't like her. So
yeah, understandably. It was probably, they decided, they're like, hey, this will be a great election. Let's come up with the two biggest shitbags we could possibly have and have them run off. And then the one who wins is the king of the shitbags. Yeah. It was amazing.
That's as good as anything I've heard so far.
All right. There is my, that is my political analysis. Wait, what if we're for, I was going to do like a funny joke about great political analysis, but I just stumbled over my words. So did you guys look up predictive policing at all?
Ouija
yes.
board.
Oh, Ouija board. Yeah. We can talk about that. Yeah. We've been waiting to hear about the Ouija board. Ooh, I wish I had some Ouija music. Let's see. Is this Ouija? No, that sounds like a news thing.
That's terrible. That's bad Ouija board music.
That's all I got.
I didn't hear any of that music when we were messing with the Ouija board.
Okay. So the Ouija board. So again, we're kind of doing a callback to the episode where we were live from Revival 1869, the bar that Mike is building. And so we decided what a cool place to go, and being an old kind of, at the time it was under a lot of construction, set up some microphones and chat about, well, just about everything, but we chatted about ghosts and things like that. So at the end, because we were out for a while, we decided to call it a night, and John stayed back with Mike and Malia to do some Ouija-ing, Ouija-ing, Ouija-ing-ing.
I think that's the verb.
Thank you. So tell me about your Ouija.
So it's the first time I'd ever mess with one, I guess you'd call it, but,
that's which, never mind. Go ahead.
And I found it somewhat intriguing because the, I have no idea what the item is that you put your hands on, whatever.
The widget.
Planchette.
What is it?
What?
That's the planchette.
Are you serious?
Planchette.
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 P-L-A-N-C-H-E-T-T, I think.
You must have done some research on Ouija.
I know things.
it's literally called the planchette?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Sounds good.
Good on you.
So it certainly did seem to move around and somewhat have a mind of its own. But, and so that was fairly intriguing to me. A couple of things, though. I felt like the less pressure you put on it, the more likely it would be to move. So that somehow putting more pressure would stop that. So you really had to have your fingers very light on it. And you're right over there, Kevin?
What's that?
What?
Oh, no. I tried to muffle a belch, and I think it came over. That was not a muffle. Yeah.
And then the other part about the, and I would say, so I mean, I'm pretty skeptical after using it, was that with the numbers and the letters, they're all very close together. And so when it moved, it was very hard to tell what letter it's over. Mm-hmm. It would be one of two to four letters. So you kind of had to just be like, is that an R? Is that an S? And you kind of were.
Isn't there like a point like in the middle of the planchette?
It was very hard for that to get anywhere. It never seemed to stop over directly over something.
Okay.
So it was a lot of, let's call that an R. And then let's, mm-hmm. you know, what are we spelling? And trying to like kind of create your own story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I felt like the movement of the planchette was fairly intriguing, but quite possibly you could be moving it unknowingly. But I found that because of the, how tight the lettering was on the board, that it was very difficult to get any kind of deciphering over what it was supposedly telling us.
Are you telling me that this is more of a children's toy than something that actually communicates with the dead?
That's where I would lean.
That's where I would lean too. I mean, if you're putting your fingers on it, if there's three people just gently resting their fingers on it, I mean, you tremble a little bit, you know, you even like, you can't just keep your hand in one spot. You're going to move a little. And if two people move, I mean, it's going to move is what I'm trying to get at.
It's a nice way to force interaction with people. Cause you're constantly yelling at the other people that they're pushing and they're not, you know, like they're not admitting it. So there's a lot of, you know, you're very skeptical of the other people, you're not trusting. And so it's a very good exercise for that. I found that we were at each other's throats the entire time. I found that very interesting as well.
I don't think I've ever done it. Have you done Ouija?
I won't.
Oh, really?
No.
But if it is just a children's toy that doesn't communicate with the dead, what's...
I just hear too many stories.
Like, what's this, like, people getting possessed?
Okay. Yes. Yes. And yeah, it could be things that people are making up. I get that. But I just, it's hard for me to believe, because I'm like an honest person. It's hard for me to believe that many people could just be making stuff up. And I've heard some pretty freaky stories.
All right. Well, because they think, like John just said, you kind of come up with your own story, whatever fits your narrative. So if you're touching this thing and you want to talk to your grandfather and it's moving along and it's like, oh, it landed on J-A, but my grandfather was John. They called him Jack. Oh, and his, I don't know, middle name was Andrew, J-A. Oh, see, it was totally my grandfather.
Right.
And it was really, you just, it was kind of like when we went to the Ryan Center and they tested our ability to, I don't remember what it's called now.
ESP or something?
Yeah. We had to like visualize something in another room.
Remote and then sensing? Was that remote viewing?
Yeah, remote viewing. And so they're like, just draw whatever. Don't think about it. Just draw it. Just put it down there. And so we were doing these things. And then they would pull out whatever the item was. And you'd be like, oh, look at, you know, like, I don't remember what I did, but you can look at the shapes and kind of, what do you call that? Backfit them into whatever.
Rationalize it.
Yeah. You go, oh, now see, this is a triangle and that has a triangle in it. So I was totally seeing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could draw random lines and I could just go in my work bag and pull something out and it'll probably, you know, you'll be able to fit it into something like that. So that's kind of how I saw it. Now, if I had a toy car in there and I told you to remote view and you start drawing a car without thinking about it, great. Right. But, everything is always with the damn metaphysical, everything is always, what's that word I'm looking for? The source, not black and white. Everything has to be gray. Even freaking people, there's cameras everywhere. 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm sure she has a phone 5, you have a phone 6, within this room, 7. There's 7 video cameras in this room right now. We didn't all say, hey, let's bring a video camera. They're just around, right? How come we can't get a clear shot of a damn UFO?
Right, or Bigfoot.
Or Bigfoot. Why is there not like HD 4K video of, it's always grainy and it's never black and white.
I know. It's a really good point, unfortunately.
So that's my rant with this whole damn metaphysical journey of trying to discover. I've yet to find something that I say, yep, that's it.
But out-of-body experiences, they make sense. And there seems to be data for those. And if that exists, then it does make sense that some people could astral project like that guy last week or the week before last. That
John Mathis.
Yeah. John Mathis. And if people can astral project, then
do you know what that
it
is,
would make
John?
Sense.
No.
People think they can, I guess, travel outside their body to different areas, areas and observe events and people.
Like through dreaming or they're actually conscious? And
like through meditating.
Hmm. I think it's sort of a dream state.
Okay.
But if that, okay, so, but my, the initial premise is that people, I think there are out of body experiences. I think that's almost proven. But let's say if that's true, then, and I'm actually arguing against myself with this, because if you can astral project, then there should be so many people helping fight crime. Because the first thing I would do is, maybe not astral projection, but maybe remote viewing. If you can remote view, the first thing I'm going to do is try to find a missing child.
I had an astral projection once, and the doctor just gave me some preparation H.
You were like thinking about that joke for the last 5 minutes, weren't you?
No, but I don't want to let down the fifth wall and let people know my thoughts.
No, but I kind of argued against myself because I've never heard of any child being saved because somebody astral projected or remote viewed and found them.
Right. Right.
It's never happened. So that means that it probably can't happen. Yeah, people can't astral project or remote view.
Which brings me to the topic of, man, I looked this stuff up all week, and all you seem, the topic of psychic detectives, so-called psychic detectives. There are so many unsubstantiated claims that these things have worked. So I decided I'm going to pick one story about it. And it was this this guy named Arthur Herbert, who his plane crashed and it was missing. So somebody knew through somebody, a psychic, and they supposedly, you know, went into the airplane moments before it crashed and she could see where it went. And it was a neat story because she said, oh, it crashed here. There's 4 survivors. And the story that I was reading was written by I guess you could call it like a metaphysical apologist, someone who always wants to lean towards, yes, this was totally a psychic experience and this is what happened. So she tells the police the coordinates, they go out, they find it, and they're like, oh my goodness, and she's a hero. So, and again, this is all like based on her, like what she told, I guess the reporters, whoever was telling the story. So then I start looking up her name, mm-hmm. and it turns out she's just full of shit. Like she apparently the,
is that what it said online?
Yeah. It was like her name was,
on her website.
Well, I won't say her name just in case she, but, it was all crap. Nothing like the coordinates that she put down were like 5 miles from where the actual event happened, which sounds like, hey, it's pretty close, but it's not like he was flying, you know, uncharted over Alaska. It was on his flight path and she was like, it happened here. Everything that she came up with could be found just by either doing a little research about the accident or, making stuff up. And so it was all self-promotion. So when I read that, then I'm like, you know, again, you know, you never find that situation where you're like, wow, it happened. And maybe they're there, but I think people can come up with enough evidence, just like drawing the picture and remote viewing. You can, you know, if I tell a story, if you tell me someone's missing, first of all, I get a 50-50 shot, whether it's a male or female. I can just look and see who goes missing more often. children. So I'm going to guess it's a child because children go missing. I'm going to guess it was a family member because children are usually abducted by family members. And then all I have to know is a little bit about maybe where they're from. And then I can start coming up with a narrative that people are like, oh, wow, he got it right. Well, it wasn't really a girl. It was a boy. And he wasn't a child. He was, you know, 17, but whatever. I mean, see, you can.
Right.
So I don't know. I think my trying to convince myself of this thing, it just falls flat sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you along those lines, and I don't consider myself psychic, but when I was a younger gentleman, I used to, this before the internet, I used to think it was funny, like if I met somebody that I would just try to guess their birthday.
Just, you just run up and do it?
I would just be like, April 16th, 1982.
Is that how you met
and Nikki? Yeah, that's how I met all my girlfriends. And I've gotten it right one time. And it completely blew that person's mind. And that person was freaked out by me. And it was just pure luck.
Did you get the year and everything?
Yeah. But normally I don't try to do the year. I just do the day and the month. But I've gotten it right a few times. And if they give me the month, which they forget that they give you, then I've gotten that a few times. Mm-hmm. And it completely just think you're just you. And this, you know, before the internet, so there's no way you could know anything about them. Mm-hmm. Just completely blew their mind. Like I'm just some, I have all this knowledge. But it was pure luck. Mm-hmm. And to me, like you're pointing out, I think that is some of it. But a lot of times with these investigations, it's intuition. And they're looking at something and they're possibly seeing something that maybe an investigator didn't see. So I think that there, it's possible, depending on who you're getting, that there could be some value in bringing somebody in who's intuitive.
Right.
I think somebody who's calling themselves a psychic and touting how brilliant they are at doing that stuff, I probably would think they're probably not somebody I would pick, but somebody who has a lot of intuition could certainly pick up on things. Maybe it's demeanor, maybe it's something in at the crime scene or whatever. But I think there could be some value if you have, you know, no leads. Obviously you're not going to be able to put a psychic in the courtroom, but as far as trying to find a suspect, I think that there are some intuitive things that could be used to help. However, I would say the closest thing that is used most likely are the FBI profilers. And I feel like they're about as effective as psychics. I mean, they do the same thing. I think it's ridiculous what they do, but
really
everybody holds it in real high esteem. But I mean, if you look at what they do, it's the same stuff. The, you know, the guys between the ages of 30 and 50, and really most of the profiles almost always seem to be the same about whoever did the crime. And then it turns out that the guy was, you know, had a wife and three kids and he was a doctor, and it's like, there was nothing, mm-hmm. but every now and then they'll be in the same realm. And they really tout that. But I mean, the DC sniper is a perfect example. They got every single, every single thing wrong, the FBI profilers.
Weren't they thinking, though, it was terrorism related, like Islamic terrorism? And
they weren't sure, but they definitely were, you know, it was a white male. Mm-hmm. It was one individual. He was a loner. They had this entire profile. I mean, it was completely wrong.
Yeah.
And just a lot of cases where it's not just that they're not helping, they're hurting, because their people are making decisions and resources are being adjusted and shifted based on this mock science, as to somehow that because the person put the body like this, they're a neat freak and that means this. And it's just, it's a lot. You're overgeneralizing so many things to try to create a profile that somehow would be helpful.
So that reminds me of the Amanda Knox documentary. I don't know if you saw that.
I have.
You did?
I didn't see it. Is it good?
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Is it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the body of Meredith Kircher was covered with a spreadsheet. The best spread.
An Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah. It was filled with taxes. Line
items. The bedspread. Okay. It was covered. And so they were like, this must have been a female because, no. This must have been somebody who knew her, because only somebody who knew like the dead person would want to cover the body. And I wonder if that's true. That's sort of like profiling. I mean, did that...
Right. I mean, some of the things the investigators use, it's just that like their experience is that it's more likely, mm-hmm. you know, this could happen. And I think there is some value in it, but that's not evidence.
Right.
You know, that's consistent with their experience kind of thing. And so that can be helpful, but creating an actual profile, which is usually that's done because the case is not solved quickly and you have a lot of resources. And so now you're creating like, here's what the person, you know, is, and then trying to find them based on that. But yeah, I mean, what the example you used, I mean, that certainly could be misleading, but I'm sure in that investigator's experience that, you know, if a body is covered, it's, you know, in, I don't remember exactly how she was covered, but that it may indicate that they don't want to see her after they've killed her. That, you know, but that also could just mean that they're an amateur. This is their first kill, mm-hmm. and that they're, you know, completely in denial and freaked out by what happened. I mean, that's another example or explanation. So, I mean, it's plausible what he said, but that's not a fact. I mean, that's not like a, you know, it's not 100%.
So when you watch that documentary, I know that to me, like, your podcast is all about people who were sort of thought to be guilty and completely misunderstood. That's probably a bad summing, but that's, I thought that this documentary was right up your alley, like her entire story.
It was. And my understanding is that it's supposedly very biased towards her. As far as the documentary, she was very mm-hmm. much involved in it. And that may be the case. But you're right. It certainly shed a different light on this case by seeing that perspective.
So what did you think before you watched it?
I wasn't that familiar with the case, actually, before.
That's what I was just going to say. I know nothing about it. I just know the news called her Foxy Noxie.
Well, so just to give a little bit of background, I don't want to go too much into it, but she was just an American student who went to study abroad in Italy. She had a roommate named Meredith Kircher, who I think she lived with for literally like 3 weeks. In a little house, a little room, and I guess a little house that they shared, and Meredith was murdered, and basically they thought she did it. The evidence that they gave for why, or the rationale that they gave for why, they made it kind of seem like she was some sort of weird, sort of sexual deviant, like maybe she was, I don't know. Doing something unusual with two guys, and Meredith came home and she decided that she was mad at Meredith for judging her and killed her. It never made any sense.
Does this go back to what we were talking about at the beginning? They had a story to tell. They were, you know, this a sensationalized crime?
The documentary, in my opinion, made it seem like that because the head chief of police was just convinced that Amanda Knox, what was happening at the same time, according to the documentary, so maybe that's biased, is that she was falling in love. She met this guy and the two of them were just, you know, just stuck together like glue, whatever. They were always together. Mm-hmm. And so that when she found the body, she calls the police and then he comes over and she and her boyfriend are kind of standing outside. And I don't know, they would watch her reaction. She looked upset to me. But she was also kissing him, but just like, not like making out, but just, you know, standing close to him and, you know, kissing. Just mm-hmm. to me, that seemed like comforting behavior. It didn't mean anything. Like it didn't, in no way, did it make me think, oh, this girl definitely murdered her roommate.
Yeah,
just
I think
insane to me.
I mean, I think the narrative on that case and what I had heard prior to looking into it was that Amanda Knox's promiscuity was like the big headline. And so that was what the case was about in the media.
Okay.
Which it doesn't appear to have really anything to do with the murder.
Well, I mean, like I said, Foxy Noxie. I know nothing about her, but I know that name because I've heard it said.
That was her name she used on some social media site.
Oh, I thought it was the news calling her that.
Well, that's where they got it from.
Oh, okay.
But one of the things that they did to her was when she was in jail, they told her that she tested positive to HIV. And then what she ended up doing was like in her journal is she wrote a list, I think, of everyone she had slept with because she thought, well, now I may have infected all these people. And the investigators took that. And so that's where it leaked, like basically that she was this, you know, had this huge sexual history, but they were lying to her. She actually did not have HIV. And they were doing that just to try to get her, I guess, I don't know what they were trying to get from her. But so that was the big story, as far as, yeah, her relationship with this guy, which I think they'd only been dating a week, but that, you know, she wasn't acting appropriately. And a lot of it was around the sexual nature. But I mean, when you look in the actual evidence in the crime, it doesn't appear to be relevant. And once again, it's just one of those things where the narrative that was presented is significantly different than what was actually going on. And I think that case is a pretty good example of that.
Yeah. I remember thinking, oh, what kind of crazy, weird sexual deviant is she? Because I was kind of like curious because it was interesting. And I could never really grasp onto what it was. There were never, no story actually ever substantiated that claim. And her, the number of people that she had slept with, like, yeah, you in felt,
the
diary.
Yeah. I was going to say, you fell for the sensationalism. You're like, oh, yeah. Titillating completely, situation.
Completely, yeah. I mean, it was interesting because she was very beautiful. And mm-hmm. it was just intriguing to think that this beautiful, innocent young girl could do something like that. So, and yeah, I thought, oh, she must be guilty. Everybody's after her.
Did she do it? Anyone know? Did she get, I don't know.
She was acquitted.
Eventually exonerated, I think, by maybe the Supreme Court of Italy. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of appeals and...
I have to check that out.
She was in jail for a very long time.
Have you seen Dear Zachary yet?
Dude, we can't talk about that again.
See, I try to trick people into seeing it.
Yeah.
Which is mean. It's like saying, here, that's look, terrible. A dead puppy. It's like, oh, why'd you show me that? Yeah. No, it's a great movie. You should check it out. Yeah. If you want, if it's like, if you're bored one night and you want to impress a guy, bring him home and be like, hey, let's watch this funny. Kevin said it was a romantic comedy. Yeah, that's one of those ones that stick with you. So, I was thinking about we could get into the, I think we'll save that for next week. The precog, precognition, you saw Minority Report, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Great. But, you know, they're using technology now to possibly, use and predict where crimes are going. Great topic. I don't know. I guess we can go into it. Got a few more minutes. Want to chat about it?
Sure. Got a little experience in that realm.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so basically what they're doing is back in 1984, if I can find my notes on it, they came up with sort of like a, they call it predictive policing. It's not as cool as Minority Report. They don't have people floating in sensory deprivation tanks and printing out little balls. Do you ever remember that? The little ball would come down, right, and have a name, yeah, of someone on it. But there was a guy named Bill Bratton. Mm-hmm. He was an NYPD commissioner. I don't know if he still is. What?
I know him.
Is he like really famous? And
in that realm, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if he's famous, but yeah, he's known.
Is that, did I just pull like a, there's a guy named Rudy Giuliani who's like a mayor of, I've never heard of him, but, he was an NYPD commissioner. I think is he still, like, didn't he get de Blasio or something? Oh, okay. Well, back in 1994, he started a thing called CompStat. So using computations of statistics, it ran, I don't know what I wrote there, but it basically analyzed statistics and data to target criminal hotspots. And so from what I understand, they would say, like, you know, let's look at July. And in July, when it's raining, you know, this many things happen in this area. Cause you know, when it's raining, people tend to go inside to the bars or whatever. So it took all this data and it said, okay, if this is what's going on, if this is, you know, October 31st, look for crimes here, here, and here. And you're yeah, going to either prevent them or you're going to, see them. I don't know, catch the people that are doing it or whatever.
Have a good show.
And what it did is it reduced murders by up to 60%.
That's awesome.
From 1984 to like, or no, no, it was like 1994 to something. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing. Now, did that alone drop down the murders? No, there was Rudy Giuliani, right? Was he in? 94?
Yeah, I mean, there was just an overall decrease in crime across the country. It's hard to isolate, but I think there are a lot of people who try to take credit for whatever they implemented during that time as being the reasoning, but I don't think that it was any one thing. And I don't think that they've had much success with any of the predictive analytics.
Okay.
And it's not as sophisticated as people want it to believe that it is. But I mean, I think that there's opportunity there, but I mean, I could tell you 100 reasons why it doesn't work, but I think it's something worth looking into. I think maybe in the future it might be something that is possible to actually provide some value. But I mean, the first thing I would say is that law enforcement is reactive, not proactive, in as their very nature. So you're kind of shifting their model right there just by trying to get them to be proactive. Mm-hmm. And that law enforcement doesn't do well with people who aren't breaking the law. Right.
Yeah.
So what do you do with someone who isn't breaking the law, but maybe is doing something that you don't like or suspicious or possibly?
Well, I have an answer for that. So in 2012 to today, isn't that crazy that 2012 is like 5 years ago? Oh, gosh, yeah. It's creepy. NYPD and Microsoft teamed up and they created a predictive policing tool called Domain Awareness System. So what they do is they have 3,000, this is where it starts getting a little creepy. They have 3,000 surveillance cameras. So they take the footage from the surveillance cameras. They take 911 calls. They take number plate readers. Number plate readers. So they can read your tag on your car as you're driving by. And it goes through some really, really like, not just the simple stuff that I talked about before, but like some real in-depth algorithms and predictive capabilities. And basically here's how they explained it. So suppose you get a 911 call about a suspicious car that you see following kids home from school. And you say, man, that's weird. I don't like that. So you call me like, hey, can you check out this car? So they say, all right, when was it? Where were you? We were in this area. And then they pull up the surveillance camera. Okay, there he is. Let's run his tag. Oh, look at this guy's a registered sex offender. You can tell where he's been. So, he got out of jail, 9 months ago. And, he was at this school and he was at this school at this time. And you come up with a pattern and you can... I don't know what you can do with it because he really hasn't done a crime. Although if you're a sex offender, you probably can't be following kids home from school. But I mean, it's just an example. There was another one where they took, and I thought I wrote it down here, where they, okay, so they, this one was crazy. They tracked 1 million Facebook pages, 40,000 phone calls from Rikers Island. So they started taking like metadata we talked about a few weeks ago. And hundreds of hours of footage from housing projects. And they ended up making a raid on one of the projects where they had 103 arrests, which all stemmed from, they were investigating two homicides. And then by making these arrests, they got the people for like 19 shootings and 50, this, that, and the other thing. But what it came down to is all this analysis led them to this raid. And it was all based on, initially a million Facebook pages. So, I mean, maybe they're looking for a simple term, like a buzzword that's being used. And then they cross-reference that with another term or the same term from a Rikers Island phone call. So these are known criminals because they don't have any protection of illegal search and seizure, right? And they were able to come up with this. So I thought that was interesting. I thought it seemed to make sense. But where does it go?
I would like to look and see what they actually did. But what I would say is that's the one time that it's ever worked for them. And that's why they're touting it. And this is going on all the time. And I don't think they're doing anything effective in New York that I know of as far as this goes. Mm-hmm. That most of those systems are significantly inadequate, far more inadequate than what they claim. And the idea of a false positive and all the issues associated with all this are significantly greater, in my opinion, than the potential positives at this point in time, which is that warning people about things that could be happening is much more problematic than them not knowing, is what I would say.
That's
in
like
most
terrorism
cases.
In a way.
It is, but think of how few, in the grand scheme of things, terrorist attacks there's been, say, in the U.S.
Exactly.
Versus crime. That kind of thing, right? Like that, how many times do you want to alert people, to be on lockdown in their house based on video footage?
Right.
And how many times you're wrong versus how many times you're right.
But I think it's a proof of concept. Like if you get it right once, where we are now with technology, as our computers get more and more capable, as AI starts being able to run these scenarios.
I haven't heard a reason as to why it's not working though yet. Like, you're talking about why it should start to work, but you haven't given your reason as to why you don't. You said you haven't.
Damn, boy.
Well, I would say, I'd say theoretically there could be some value there, but someone has to be able to set the parameters. So you have to get some kind of definable parameters for what's suspicious, what isn't suspicious, what this does, what that does. But the big question is who pays for it and how do you afford that? I mean, you think New York, NYPD doesn't have the money to put all that in. Mm-hmm. And then who's training all these police officers? It's another factor. The coordination, which, people think because there's a surveillance camera that means it has value. There are surveillance cameras all over the place. But are the tapes being kept? Most places run the tapes over themselves all the time. They only keep them for a week. And you're not going to go and pull you know, videotapes on something unless it's a murder or something really serious, you know, a severe felony. So just the fact that there are surveillance cameras, they have to be working, they have to be in the right position.
But
and I know that's not proof of concept. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
technically,
like,
is it possible? I'd say that, you know, all the things we see in these movies are technically possible. They're theoretically possible. Mm-hmm. But the human element is such a big factor that that becomes an issue, is what I would say in all these. I'm not saying that it's not possible, that there's not value in it. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's a very costly, inefficient way of doing things. And it's a very difficult road to go down. As far as, and then the whole issue of trying to coordinate this. So, you know, is it the police department that's always coordinating it? Is it the buildings? So is it, you know, private sector? Is it the federal government? Who's controlling this? How is Queens working with Manhattan in that example? Or, you know, in New York University, they have their own police department, I'm sure. So how are they networked in? And so all those factors that you just kind of don't think about would become incredibly significant if you're trying to actually run this on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And then are you getting rid of police officers to pay for it? Do you need more police officers? And then the other thing is that, you know, a lot of this is intelligence. It's not evidence, right? And that's a very, like, you know, intelligence is very different than evidence. You know, police, they have predicates for the crimes committed. They arrest somebody, they go to jail. Intelligence is gathering information and making a case for what you have seen. And, you know, I always like to laugh when they talk about intelligence and they'll be like, well, they knew Kennedy was going to be assassinated. Well, evidence or in intelligence, you don't know. You just have information that you're putting together and you're creating a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And so that's what these systems are doing. They're pulling together information and coming to a conclusion. It's not a fact. It's just that's what they're doing. So there's a lot of flaws in that. Think of, you know, the Iraq war as far as weapons of mass destruction or whatever. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of issues with intelligence. So, I mean, I think that it's a very promising field. I think that we may get there at some point. But I think that they're just the human element, the cost factor, the coordination. Police departments historically do not communicate well with each other. There's just a lot of they're an old school type industry. Not that that can't change, but you know, it's just to me, it's something that it's something we need to do. But I think that it's a long ways off for it to be actually successful.
Well, I crushed my dreams of.
I know.
What was that? The Minority Report? I thought for sure. I wanted those floating cars to come in and snaps one up before they commit the murder.
But I know they're using this like on the border a lot. They have similar systems that they use along the border for like interdicting like drug trafficking and human trafficking. And it's been fairly effective there just basically because of it's not a lot of organizations. It's a lot of open area. There's not as much that can kind of get in the way. So it has apparently been pretty effective in that realm. But within the city environment, I have not heard of a lot of success with it yet.
Hmm. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting to think about the video camera thing. Because you're right. If something was caught on video, unless you went back and looked within a week, and sometimes even less time, you're probably never going to know. So all kinds of stuff could have been filmed, and it doesn't matter.
Right. And those timestamps are usually off on those things. So like the time that you want, the cameras aren't always synced to the right time. Usually it's not your best employees that you put in charge of like, you know, storing the tapes or whatever from the video. And so there's a lot of simple things that can go wrong that could cause, you know, major issues with that. Just it's not as seamless as in a movie that where you're just flipping a switch and looking at all of them and tracking them going around. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you think it's that simple. And then it's like how many times a police officer is attacked or shot and they can't find that person's location. This is a police officer that has a radio that called in their location and they can't find them. You know, it's just like, how does that happen? It happens all the time.
Do you ever see, I think it might be DC that has the speakers hooked up. So, or I'm sorry, microphones hooked up. So if you hear a shot, it can triangulate and they can get the exact location that shot was fired. So I thought that was pretty cool. They can even tell like the caliber or type of, was it a pistol? Was it a 45 by its, yeah. It's
well, there's neat. A lot of gunshots in DC.
Yeah. Yeah. DC is a mess. Well guys, really, really cool discussion today. I won't have to do much editing at all. Actually, I'm just going to print, go to print, done. It's up right now. Twistedpodcast.com. If you want to check out John Taylor's true crime podcast, and I would suggest check it out. It's pretty cool. And of course you can find his books. I'm never going to be able to repeat the titles of them because whenever I'm on the spot, I forget things. Wait, hold on.
Does he know them?
No, I do. You can find it at truecrimewriting.com. There'll be links to
that's correct.
His two books on true crime. No, I was going to try to remember the name of the book, but I can't remember them. One's on JonBenet and the other one's on the woman up in Cary, North Carolina. But yeah, you can check those out at truecrimewriting.com. And then Savannah, what's new? What are we plugging for you? Oh, Triangle Futurist. Yes. You guys had any meetups?
Triangle
lately?
Futurist. I tried to have a meetup a couple weeks ago. But I think what I'm going to do now is more cross-posting with other meetups.
Okay.
Just
not a strong turnout?
Yeah. I have 100-something followers. Not followers, but sorry. That sounds
members?
Members, yeah. That sounds better. But none of them show up. Hmm. One guy was actually even needling me to have a meetup. He's like, it's very important that you have a meetup soon. So I had one. And he didn't come.
Oh. Screw you, Triangle Futurists. Come on.
But join, and I will be cross-posting with other futuristy type activities in the Triangle area. So,
and if you're interested in that futurism stuff, you'd be happy to know that the Wait What If podcast is now a weekly podcast for at least the next 2 weeks. And we do our little Futurism Fridays every other Friday.
Yeah, this last one we talked about Watson becoming an accountant.
Yes, it was terribly exciting to learn about how Watson would do our taxes. It was...
I think that's exciting.
I know. I'm just kidding with you, obviously. Patriots won the Super Bowl. Tom Brady is now the greatest quarterback of all time, set in stone. No one can ever beat his legacy. And you can go to waitwhatif.com. Yeah, check out. Everything's going to be on there. That's where I just drive everyone now, throwing pens around the room. Means it's getting late. So thanks, guys.
Bingo.
Love the flow. 69. Now it's time for new believable people, and we must do it. If we don't control insiders, this will be over and over. To lead by an inning, big fat love, find common ground to halt the spread of lies. And we must do it, big fat love, find common ground to halt the spread of lies. And any
America first, America first,
non-fatal. We want to build a much better, believable people, and we must do it non-fatal. Communication
very much higher. America first.
To lead by an inning.
Insiders fighting for insiders.
Time to stop.
Insiders fighting for insiders. More of insiders fighting for insiders.